What form will the business model for the Austrian entrepreneurship revolution take? There's an emerging example in the field of medical care, and it's already fully enabled.
This is the Economics for Business podcast. We're here to help all businesses become champions for customers and value, improving lives with preferred and innovative products and services. We offer you the knowledge and tools to make your entrepreneurial journey a successful one. Now, here's your host, Hunter Hastings.
Hi, Hunter Hastings here. Let's talk business models. On our Economics for Business platform, we introduce the Austrian business model and its key elements, which we identify as the four Vs. Those are V for value identification, V for value facilitation, V for the value experience, and V for value agility. This is the generic form of a business model that applies to every business, every project, every website, every e-commerce startup, and every brand. Value identification is the recognition of new value potential, an unmet need, or a potential improvement, or a dissatisfaction that's unaddressed, and may even be unarticulated and probably unimagined by the customer, but nevertheless an entrepreneurial opportunity. Value facilitation is the design and assembly of a product or service or system that can make this potential value realizable for a customer, removing all the barriers to consumption and making it desirable and feasible and easy and convenient. Value experience lies in the customer domain of subjective evaluation. And value agility is the entrepreneurial monitoring and gathering feedback from the customer's value experience, and adapting and responding with improvements and enhancements to run the cycle again at higher effectiveness, higher value, higher productivity, and higher profit. All business models follow this cycle. This generic model is rendered specific in every entrepreneurial business. Entrepreneurial businesses are superior because they run the four V's cycle at speed and at scale for the increasing benefit of their customers. One of the fields where we're seeing a renaissance of the entrepreneurial business model is in medical care, which we've touched on in a few podcasts recently. It's kind of a harbinger of things to come. If we can reinstall value-generating entrepreneurial innovation and customer sovereignty into medical care, so bogged down by corporate and government bureaucracy and value destruction, then we can repeat it in every sector of the economy. This week's guest is Christopher Habig, CEO of Freedom HealthWorks. Chris is introducing a novel approach to nurturing entrepreneurship in medical care. He's providing a platform on which an individual medical practice can run. The physician entrepreneur can secure all the backroom and operating systems and infrastructure needed to run a business, all the technology and financial and payment systems, and all the patient and vendor relationship management, and can concentrate on the unleashing and maximization of the potential value in the doctor-patient relationship. Let's hear about it. Chris, welcome to the Economics for Business podcast.
Thank you, Hunter. Glad to be here.
Well, we're looking forward to talking to you. We talk about the intersection between the Austrian brand of economics, which is all about customer value, and then about the entrepreneurial generation of that value. So that's the intersection, if you like. And we've discovered you and Freedom HealthWorks, which applies that entrepreneurship and customer value in healthcare. So we're excited to hear about it. And let's start with your personal background and you know, the beginnings of Freedom HealthWorks, and then we'll work from there.
It can be a long story or a short story, Hunter. Freedom HealthWorks is born out of just personal frustration with the medical system and trying to access patient care. That's, you know, kind of the company line, my line. I was pretty much raised in a physician's office. Mom and dad are both physicians, still practicing and actually clients of Freedom HealthWorks, from a direct care standpoint. And so, you know, it's very personal, as in, you know, most of these are where you realize that there's a big problem going on. It affects your loved ones. It affects your everyday life. And you're thinking, there's got to be a better way to do this. And so, you know, back in the 2013, 2014 time, we were looking at, my brother and I co-founded Freedom Healthworks. So very much a family business. And we were looking at, you know, shutting down a previous company of ours that was just completely regulated out of the market, out of business, basically. It was a very early EMR disease management tool. And so when a lot of those, you know, the big boys sat on those boards and rewrote the healthcare rules for meaningful use and all this kind of stuff, there was zero room for innovative small companies with installs at a few hospital systems, you know, across the nation. And so I remember us, you know, sitting in there, we, you know, might have had a couple of beers as we're just kind of sitting there saying, hey, what's next for us? And we identified two problems with healthcare innovation and two big barriers that constantly get in the way. And we wrote them on the board. And, you know, Hunter, I don't think it's going to be any surprise that those two words were insurance and government is stifling innovation in healthcare. And a lot of people will say, well, it's stifling innovation in education too. There's a lot of similarities. And so we said, well, how do we design a healthcare business that helps the people that we need, doctors, nurses, how do we help them without involving those two barriers on the board up there? And so we started researching cash-based medical practices, and it kind of snowballed from there. We interviewed a ton of physicians around the country that were doing this type of direct care model in the very early days, whether it's concierge medicine or just self-pay, you know, kind of retainer medicine. And it kind of grew from there into what we have right now today, which is really multiple parts of an incubator, an accelerator, and a direct care network. And that's you know, the short and dirty version of the Freedom Healthworks origin story.
Well, that's really exciting, Chris. And we're beginning to understand or hear a little bit more about direct primary care. And let's dissect that in a little bit more detail to understand it. And then I see you as building a platform to make that more available and more capable and higher capacity. So I want to get into that too. But we always like to start from the customer's perspective. And the customer in this case is the patient, the individual, the family. And we always talk about entrepreneurs getting a deep understanding of what customers really want, what their preferences are. It's all the emotional and personal feeling, and there's nothing more personal than healthcare, obviously, but it's hard to understand. So tell us about that side, how you understand the customer or the patient, their needs and their wants, and how you go about trying to address them.
We have the advantage of fighting a very murky status quo. Let me start with that one. Most patients, their experience with the healthcare industry today is full of question marks, uncertainty, fear. What we're trying to do is really turn on the lights and watch all the cockroaches scatter. We're bringing price transparency. We're bringing, you know, patient advocacy back into it. We're bringing back the small town doctor relationship. You know, everybody knows who, you know, most people know who Norman Rockwell is, great American painter. And he did this great little painting of an old school physician, this kind of romanticized view of a physician that we all have. Guy's little black bag, making house calls, you know, stethoscope around his neck. And he has a stethoscope up on this little girl's doll. And I like to tell people, we're bringing that back. That is no longer a flight of fancy. Direct primary care physicians are doing that these days. So, you know, to get a little bit more in the weeds there, you know, we're fighting somebody that, you know, when you go to see the typical doctor, you don't know the price, right? You don't know what's going to come out of it. You have a very limited time. You usually have to wait weeks to get an answer back from a physician. And then, you know, you just hold your breath and hope that an insurance bill or a balance bill doesn't show up in the mail for something that may or may not have happened on the exam room. This whole concept that people say, well, I have great insurance, or I have a preventive visit, a free preventive visit. People have really been hoodwinked over the years, thinking that they have to have health insurance to access medical care. And that is just not true. What we're doing is reinserting the doctor-patient relationship back into actual medical care. So one of our taglines that we always use is health insurance does not equal healthcare. Healthcare is a fifth of our economy right now, which is insane to think about. But that boils down to the interaction of one doctor and one patient in an exam room. One fifth of the United States economy is built off of that interaction. In our model, it is just the physician and just the patient in that exam room. The physician provides medical services, as much medical service as they possibly can. And the patient pays them a very transparent price. And so where we come in is the recurring model of revenue for the physician. Some people have called it the Netflix of healthcare. I'm not a big fan of referring to other people's businesses, when describing your own, but it seems to resonate. When people were stuck in big cable contracts and you're paying for 500 channels that you don't use, and all of a sudden here comes Netflix and says, hey, you can stream whatever you want to watch, whenever you want to watch it. It is a great little parallel for what your experience is if you join a direct primary care practice. And so, with that, we're built on three big, calling the three A's: advocacy, access, and affordability. That's what people want in healthcare. If I'm sick, I need an answer now. I'm going to text my doctor, call my doctor, do a video chat, or come in with zero barriers, zero disincentives to actually seeking medical care. And when that happens, we see healthier people, we see a more trusting relationship, we see people save money, and we see a lot less what we call lost sheep in the healthcare world because you have a primary care physician who's guiding you through any type of specialist visits, imaging, surgeries, hospitalizations, you name it. You will always have a second opinion there from your primary care doctor who knows you, knows your environment, knows your history, knows your family.
Yes, I see that on the customer side, you're addressing, we can call it unease or dissatisfaction, and people are uncertain, and here's a one-on-one relationship that gives them access to everything that they want in healthcare. So I think we can understand that. On the other side of the intersection we talked about at the beginning, we think of it as the entrepreneur, and it sounds like you're making that doctor, the other side of that one-on-one relationship, you're making that individual into an entrepreneur. And we mean that very positively in the sense of an entrepreneur has the service ethic of trying to understand people's needs and trying to meet those needs, which is a good description of a doctor, I think. So is that an accurate picture? The doctor becomes
absolutely
an entrepreneur?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're returning physicians back into independent practice. I'm a big fan of independent practice. I don't want my doctor to get a nasty email from administrator because they didn't send me down the hall to a specialist to rack up my bill. Right. And Hunter, I'm a firm believer that there is a massive conflict of interest happening in American hospitals and American health systems today. And the patient is the loser on this every single time. Now, what do I mean by that? If I'm a primary care doctor, I go see my primary care doctor. They can't really figure out what's wrong with me in 7 minutes. A primary care doctor says, hey, I need you to go see this specialist. And by the way, he happens to be right down the hall because he's in my network. Or he's in my hospital system. There's no incentive for that doctor to say, let me call up a colleague who really specializes in this and let me find some answers for you before I send you on to downstream care to rack up the bill. And you better believe there's pressure from up high in that hospital system to say, whether Chris needs these tests or not, let's go ahead and run them because that's the only way that they're going to get paid. So returning physicians back into independence, that's where the innovation happens. That's where, supply and demand happens. We're returning market forces back into medical care.
So as I explored the Freedom HealthWorks site, Chris, I got the impression that it's not just direct primary care, but there are other specialties that are enabled by your platform. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a lot of great physicians out there that are doing this themselves. I don't want to take away from them by any means. And specialists have really gone out there and, there's not very many of them, but they're doing incredible work. And so really what our vision is to create an end-to-end, completely alternate healthcare system that is completely cash pay. No insurance involvement whatsoever. And what we're doing there is cutting down on waste. Like I said, we're getting supply and demand back into healthcare. letting market forces pick who people are going to go to. And when we do that, the cost of medical care absolutely plummets. I mean, you're having surgeries for 10% of what you're going to get at the hospital, or what the hospital would pay for insurance, or bill the insurance company, excuse me. And so we're cutting out all the waste and cutting out all the middlemen. And so starting with primary care, I like to tell people that we're really rebuilding healthcare in a strong foundation. You know, if we think about the United States healthcare system right now, it's shaped more like an inverted pyramid. And what I mean by that is at the base of healthcare is primary care. It's most people's entry point into the system. When I'm sick, you go see primary care, you go see urgent care. People should not go to the emergency department, but some do. But the least amount of time and money is being spent and valued at that primary care level, at the entry level. The vast majority of money and resources and time is being spent in subspecialists and being spent in surgeries. And that is completely unsustainable. And that's why there's a lot of frustration out there right now. And what I want to do is topple that over, build a base up with primary care, let your primary care doctor handle anywhere from 80 to 95% of most people's medical needs in any given year, and then use the specialist and use surgery very, very sparingly. Again, you know, it build up that patient-doctor relationship and build in local communities of medical professionals that get to know their people and know their environment. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Plus, it also keeps healthcare dollars very, very local. You're not shipping your healthcare dollars out of state, which is always very, very important to a lot of communities.
How does the patient deal with catastrophic long-term situations like having a cancer diagnosis and then you're into considerable expense for all of the treatments that you get? How does that work in your system?
Yeah, I am by no means one of those people who says nobody should ever have health insurance. I believe that we misuse health insurance. Insurance, the definition of insurance is a risk-adjusted financial tool. That's it. So if something really, really bad happens to me, let me use this example. If something bad happens to my home, which is for most people going to be the most expensive thing they ever purchase, including medical care in their life, if it burns down, I'm insured. Why is my homeowner's insurance so much more affordable than my healthcare insurance? It's because we use health insurance as a prepaid health plan. And so once we kind of flip that light in people's minds that say, wow, I don't need insurance to go talk to a doctor. The only reason I need insurance is if that 2% likelihood event happens, cancer diagnosis, car wreck, something really, really bad happens to me. That is what health insurance should be designed around. Unfortunately, we design health insurance around all the other things, all the very low percentage of probabilities. No other insurance product is built like that, from life insurance, homeowners insurance, auto insurance, umbrella policies. Everything is built, on percentages of likelihood. And I'm 34, relatively good health. I've never had any health issues in my life, So I should not be paying thousands of dollars to be insured, but that's what we've built in the US right now. And that's why a lot of people are very, very unhappy.
Yeah. Okay, understood. Thank you. So it seems to me, and tell me if this is the wrong way to perceive it, what you're doing at Freedom HealthWorks is your business model is helping the doctors to establish their business model. That you talk about the setup of the practice, the ongoing administration and operations, and maybe a good example is setting up a doctor's practice for the first time. So tell us a little bit about Freedom HealthWorks setting up the doctor's practice or helping them with the setup.
It's about 158 steps to go from idea to actually opening the doors and seeing the patients. Some people might say, hey, it's really daunting, or some people might say, wow, that's, no stone is left unturned. And that's where the platform really comes in. We have a very turnkey approach. We want to embrace each and every physician's personality to make sure that they have the dream practice that they want. But there are a lot of people out there, a lot of physicians out there who have gone out and started independent practices and made very, very expensive mistakes. And so, you know, on one hand, we're giving doctors their lifestyle back, really, the work-life balance. You know, there's a reason why physicians have the number one suicide rate in the nation right now.
Is that right?
Wow. It's tough. You know, they use terms like burnout. I've always been a big proponent that if any other industry used the term burnout, then they would be just saddled with lawsuits from workplace abuse. And, you know, that's what we're doing to our doctors right now. We say, oh, it's burnout, or they're mentally weak, or whatever it is. And so, you know, you can only push somebody so far before they're going to break. And so, and unfortunately, we are breaking our community's best and brightest people. That's it. You know, not everybody can be a doctor. It takes somebody that has that conviction, the intelligence to be able to do it. And they actually give a crap about, you know, their fellow citizens. They actually want to help us and take care of us in our time of need. Not everybody's built for that. Medicine's not a career. It's a calling for so many people, yet we are alienating them and forcing them out. And, you know, the vast majority of the doctors that we work with would be completely out of medicine right now. I mean, think about that. They're in their 30s and 40s, and they say, I was at the point where I didn't want to be a doctor anymore. And then working with Freedom Health Works, getting a clear path forward, simple choreographed step, and then able to hand them the keys, you know, it saved their career and saved their home life. And they're doing amazing work for their communities. And they are the happiest people I have the pleasure of interacting with day in and day out. So it really is a fully managed, you know, startup, white glove service. We'll take you from idea concept to actual opening the business. And then we'll help you manage it so you can keep your overhead as low as possible. We'll connect you to other doctors so that you have referral networks. And we'll make sure that, you know, you're not practicing in a silo. A lot of younger physicians coming out of school right now say, well, I like the camaraderie of the physician's lounge. And we say, great, we're going to be able to replicate that by hooking you up with doctors doing the same thing you're doing across the country. And so, you know, I always tell people we're an incubator, we're an accelerator, and we're a network all boiled into one.
A quick note. Did you know that we provide supplemental materials for each podcast? Listening to and understanding the key takeaways from our expert guests helps you think better about building a more beautiful business. Taking direct action and implementing these strategies is when the real work begins. Take a concrete, immediate step to implementing a better business model today by downloading the show notes and business tool we've created for this episode. Visit Mises.org/E4BPod. That's Mises.org/E4BPod. And click on today's episode. Now, back to our interview.
So there are a number of services on the Freedom HealthWorks site that are listed, like financial planning, for example, which you often don't think about in terms of running a practice, but obviously you got to be pretty good at that if you're a direct primary care physician. Are you providing all of those services, or are you integrating them with QuickBooks and things like that, or are you contracting with other service providers? Tell us how that network works.
Yeah, we do as much as we can. Obviously, we're not going to be the company that goes out and does your blood draws and runs your labs or anything like that. We have national vendor networks set up. So again, you know, being a patient in one of these practices, your lab prices is going to be 10% of what you would get, you know, walking in under your insurance card somewhere else. We enable these practices to do in-office dispensing. So they get wholesale prices on prescriptions, saving a ton of money there. There's all kinds of benefits we work with, but we do have a national vendor database that we pull from. We're just really kind of the sinew, kind of the muscles that hold everything together. When it comes to financial analysis in particular, you know, that's a skill set that not many physicians have. They usually physicians have about 5 hours of business education throughout undergrad, medical school, and residency. And most of that is how to bill insurance. And so when we're looking at them saying, okay, great, How much do you want to make a year? What is your overhead percentage? What is your break-even number of patients in your mind? And they're thinking, well, I've never been asked that in my life. And you know what we're able to show them is that with a membership model, membership business model in your Freedom Doc practice, you're breaking even at like 70 patients because the overhead and the cost and the expenses are so low. And so now you get back up to income replacement from where you were working your tail off and, you know, being very depressed in a hospital, you're getting that back at about 300 patients. And then once you max out your patient panel, you're probably making more money than you ever have in your life. And you have a very healthy work-life balance where you're able to go home to your family every night at 5 p.m. It's very hard for doctors to look at that and say, well, that sounds great, but what's the catch? And then we laugh and we say, no, we promise there's no catch. It's patients respecting you. It's you respecting yourself. And, you know, we tell doctors a lot that, hey, profit is not a bad word. Profit is a very normal word. You deserve to get paid what you do because very few people can actually do this job.
Yep. We love profit. Profit's the signal from the customer that you're doing the right thing. So,
yeah, absolutely. So other people, then they say, well, what about, doesn't this exacerbate the doctor pay, the, what is it? They call it physician shortage. And that's always the one thing where critics say, well, this model can't work because it's taking, you know, a doctor with 2000 patients, maybe 3000 patients, and it's taking them down to 500 maximum. And I just kind of laugh at that, thinking, how dare these people believe that doctors should just be indentured servants into these 2,000 people out here, and that a doctor must be chained to their desk and say, oh, well, if I don't take care of these 2,000 people, they can't get medical care, but, you know, screw my mental health, screw my, you know, my will to live sometimes. You know, they're treating doctors like robots, and I'm just completely, fully against it. And so the answer to that is, well, it's either they see 500 patients or they see zero, because these doctors will leave medicine altogether. And then what is that going to do for us? Right. And so now we're making primary care more attractive to a lot of physicians out there who would normally go into specialty. And so our goal, long-term goal, is to drive up the number of primary care physicians coming out of school. But, you know, there's barriers to that too. The government's obviously in the way from a residency standpoint. And that's a road that I'm always more than happy to go down. But, you know, it always comes back to, we wouldn't be here if the government and insurance companies just got out of the way and let people seek medical care and give medical services the way that they wanted.
Yeah, we always believe that the company that takes the more human approach is the one that succeeds. So you're certainly taking the more human approach. Just to understand, we talked about setting up the business model, and you just described that very well. Let's say I'm operating my practice. Things happen, stuff comes up that I'm not used to because I've never done this before. Can they come to you and ask those questions and get that kind of consulting or operations support?
Oh, absolutely. We have weekly meetings with our account managers, with our staff. I mean, if somebody wants to call me up and talk to me directly, they can. Everybody has our emails. It really is the white glove service. We want to be the first contact for them. Now, if someone calls up and says, hey, Chris, I found this rash on one of my patient's arms. What do you think about this? I'm not the guy to ask for that. You know, we say our service is stop in the exam room. Once you enter the exam room, you, doctor, are going to go do what you do. We're going to stay in the back office. We'll help you run the front office, but we're going to be very much on the business side and the customer experience side of your practice. We did not go to medical school. We don't act like we went to medical school. I would never try to step in and say, you know, this is how you be a doctor. But what we are able to do there is, like I said, you know, we connect them to their peers, to other Freedom Docs across the country. And we say, look, we want information to flow as free as possible. So, you know, if you have a colleague down in Mobile, Alabama, and then we got somebody up in Minneapolis, and they can connect and talk about those medical issues or whatever else is going on, please do so. We don't want any practice to operate in a vacuum. And we want to make sure that that expertise and that those information is are flowing as freely as possible. You know, one interesting thing that comes out of this is when we get a physician who says, hey, it's been a great run. I'm getting older. I got grandkids now. I'm going to slow down. I'm going to look at retiring in a couple of years. Hey, Chris, can your team bring on more of an apprentice type of physician? And, you know, this really, it really kind of, you know, made me smile when this first started happening, because there's lasting value to these practices, right? It's a membership business. But think of the longevity of really medical care and the value it brings to, you know, our population. When a doctor hits them in their mid-60s, they're usually at their peak of their career. It's a practice of medicine, right? So they're experienced. They've seen a lot of different stuff. Them, if they would just close their door and walk away, we would lose 3-4 decades of medical knowledge. Localized medical knowledge would just disappear. The human race is built upon a collective knowledge, right? And so what we're able to do is start these apprentice programs or externships where they're hiring somebody to come in and take over their patient base, teaching them along the way. And that right now is very, very scarce in American healthcare. And so that's one of the kind of the more rewarding side effects of this business that we've been able to bring forward.
Chris, what about technology? You and I talked briefly about this earlier, but technology is now potentially very helpful to both the doctor and the patient. It's moving at great speed. I had a conversation the other day about from a technologist about an oncologist's office, which the technologist sees as certain amounts of hardware, certain amounts of software, certain amounts of data analysis, a network to connect you to labs and things like that. How do you or can you advise the doctors on technology and tech setup?
Absolutely. It's a very integral part of each and every one of the practices that we set up. You know, looking at what we just went through in 2020 with the pandemic, a lot of people are seeing, wow, this thing called virtual healthcare, virtual care, or whatever you want to call it, this is a revolution. This is a game changer. And I laughed because, you know, the virtual capability was inherent in the DNA of every practice that we stood up since 2015. That technology has been around since the mid 90s. Why did it take a massive global pandemic for the entire industry as a collective to wake up and realize, oh, hey, this is actually some useful, you know, information here? So I love technology as a supplement to patient care. Okay. I think it is a great potential to deburden medical professionals. I'm going to emphasize deburden them, not mm-hmm. add to their workload. Too many EMRs right now are adding to physicians' workloads and they're driving them insane. I usually joke that paper and pen's a form of technology. It's just depending which era you're in, right? And so, you know, from wearables and everything being connected and sharing, you know, instant information, we joke about, you know, Star Trek when they wave the wand over somebody and they're able to run all their diagnostics. I mean, I think that's cool, but it doesn't replace. We're not at the point right now where we're going to replace the physical interaction from a physician or really that experience that I was just talking about, where the pinnacle of medical care is when a doctor is able to look at you and realize that something is wrong. That's my firm opinion. I think mm-hmm. a lot of lives have been saved over that, where, you know, they might look at you and say, well, Hunter, you're looking a little pale, or, you know, vice versa. You're really flushed. Are you okay? Let's make sure that everything's going on inside. That is the kind of doctor-patient relationship that I want. And that's the kind of doctor-patient relationship that we want all of our Freedom Docs to have with their patients. Technology can play a role in that, absolutely, but it's as a supplemental tool. In my opinion, it shouldn't and won't for a very long time replace the physical interaction of a patient and a doctor. Just because there's so many different things going on from a patient history standpoint, you know, most of medicine's genetics is what's going to happen to us. And so I don't think my Fitbit being able to connect to my phone that my doctor can see if I'm taking steps, it's kind of cool, but we're just not there yet in that sense. I'm more interested in how do I enable, you know, communications between a doctor and a patient to happen mm-hmm. more freely, more securely when they're out of the office. You know, our goal is to keep people healthy, keep them out of the office, because, you know, that incentive is now there for the physician to keep their patients healthy so that they keep coming back. You know, whereas a hospital system, they only make money when you're sick and they have to come in person. And that's why a lot of practices failed during the pandemic, is because, you know, their billing was completely screwed up, and we completely separated the buyer and the seller of medical services, and we didn't have a way to recoup that. And so under our model, sellers and buyers of medical services are once again connected.
You mentioned incentives, Chris, and as we come at things from an economic standpoint, we often think in those terms. I was thinking about your doctors. Are they members of your organization in any sense? Are they just sitting on your platform? Can they develop any equity in your system? Is there an incentive for them to do better? How does all that work?
Yeah, they're just users. You know, in the basic sense, we are a vendor of theirs. We like to call ourselves partners, but there's no equity trading for these practices. You know, their incentives from our standpoint, you know, we are incentivized to make sure that their practices are running along at max efficiency. We have a different definition of efficiency. You know, we want to make sure that they're limiting their in-person visits to 6 to 8 people a day. Okay. We're not saying you got to go out and see 40 people a day to hit your numbers. I don't believe in that. We don't believe in that at all. From an incentive standpoint, from our doctors seeing their patients, they're incentivized to keep them healthy. You know, I've had multiple physicians say, you know, my goal in my new practice is to not have anybody walk through my door, meaning that all 500 of my patients are completely healthy and they don't actually need to take time out of their day, take time away from their families, take time away from their job to come sit in my practice and see me. You know, time is the one thing we're never going to get more of. And so when a doctor is now taking your time into consideration for treating you and providing the advice that you need, you and your family need, it really changes the dynamic of, again, seeking out medical care. These patients are now incentivized. On the first sign of trouble, I'm going to alert my doctor. You know, when my newborn baby has a cough or newborn baby has a rash, if I have some pain in my shoulder, if I cut myself in the kitchen, I'm going to take a picture of that. I'm going to send it to my doctor. And then we're going to see what kind of things need to be done at that point in time. Because I know that doctor now has my best interest in mind. If you did this in a different model, in the insurance model, one, you wouldn't get a response from anybody if you sent a picture into your doctor or called them and said, hey, I'm bleeding, I cut myself. They're going to say, go to the ER. I mean, think of the time sacrifice. Think of the money wasted when that happens because the physician's office can't see you for another 3 weeks. And this happens every single day, right? How many people had conditions and diseases that got worse because they thought that they were just tough it out rather than making an appointment to go and see the doctor? And there's a lot of scary things that start rippling through when you think about it in those terms. You know, wow, what kind of damage would I do if I just decided to stay home and try to tough this out? How many hours am I missing at work? How does that impact my family? Yeah, are we stressed out because we're worrying about, you know, me not being at work or trying to get other people sick? Like, there's a whole litany of problems that can stem from that. So when you change incentives from a doctor's standpoint into keeping that person healthy, rather than you're only making money by treating that person and keeping them sick, now we are incentivized to help you overcome your diabetes, right? We're incentivized to help you overcome your chronic conditions, not just maintain them. And to me, that is a big, big shift in U.S. healthcare policy.
Yeah. I always say that the incentives for certainly the pharmaceutical companies and often the hospital systems and so on is they want you to be unhealthy. They want you to be sick. That's how they make money.
It's a sick care system. A lot of people will say, we don't have a health care system. We have a sick care system. You know, emphasis is on prevention. Emphasis is on curing it. Hunter, just an old joke we always pass around our halls is that, you know, there's no insurance billing code for actually curing somebody. If you walked into a doctor's office and you're sick, they don't get paid for curing you. They only get paid for treating your diseases.
Yeah. Well, you're doing a great job in redirecting those incentives. So congratulations for that. So some of us are a bit nervous about the future. You see these bureaucracies and the giant insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies, and you think, how can you battle against that? You're certainly doing the work and you're helping doctors to do it and helping consumers to think that way. What do you see in the future? Is direct primary care and all the direct care, is that going to be the model for the future? Can it be predominant?
I think it can. Couple questions, you know, scalability. We're proving that you can scale this type of a model out there. There's a lot of DIY mom and pop practices doing their thing, and that's fantastic. The more that proliferates, the more of those doctors that we're able to pull out of networks, of insurance and hospital networks, you know, the better off we're going to be. The biggest barrier right now, Hunter, it's education. How many people across the United States know that you can walk into a doctor's office, ask them how much a treatment or a visit is going to cost, and they're going to give it to you? For some reason, we are just, I don't know if it's embarrassment, but we're just conditioned to just accept medical care. We produce this little plastic card that's in our wallet and say, yeah, I guess I'll just take whatever this gets me. No other, we would never do that ever, anywhere. I don't understand why people don't walk into a doctor's office and ask questions about prices. It is just completely baffles me. And so I always say that's the next step, right? Where do we go from here? We should get every single person in the United States to walk into their doctor's office and say, great, I'm here for my yearly physical. I'm here for my flu shot. I'm here for whatever it is. How much is this going to cost me? And if you get the answer that, well, it depends on your insurance, just politely ask them again. Say, no. If I was going to just pull out a $50 bill, would that cover this? How many $50 bills? How many 20s? If I was going to write you a check right now, what would that amount be for you to see me right now? Nobody does that. And I think that's one of the biggest barriers. That's a problem. Because if people did that, they would realize this is insanity. Why is this functioning this way? I don't think very many people are happy with the way that traditional healthcare functions, but nobody's asking those questions. So that always kind of irks me. You know, that's a huge barrier in an education standpoint. And so, you know, can this become a big enough to be a rival system like we envision, right? Can we build out a completely cash-based healthcare industry? The answer is yes, it's already happening. You know, we got calls from primary care doctors in rural Wisconsin said, hey, I have a patient who needs oncology services. I have another patient who needs colonoscopies. And there's cash surgery centers popping up all over the country. There's cash specialists that are popping up all over the country. We're already building out the entire system and platform that enables a patient to stay in a low-cost, transparent price cash healthcare system. It is already happening today. Now, is there a way that we get regulated out again? You know, lightning strikes twice for me. I don't know. The easy answer is yes, but I don't see it unless the federal government takes over medical licensing and doesn't let people completely opt out of Medicare. That would be the only thing. You know, if Washington said to be a doctor in the United States, you have to see Medicare patients, that would be a major, major barrier to what we're doing. But, you know, with that, you know, you look at what the British are doing. You know, NHS has a complete parallel system of all cash pay physicians. It's a different subset of the people that are able to access that. It's mostly the wealthier people. Whereas what we're doing is we're bringing concierge medical care to the masses with low costs. You know, membership to our practice is running anywhere from $60 to $120, depending on where you are in the country. And that's what's really cool. And medical care gets back to local economics. If you're in the middle of rural Kansas, you're not going to be paying as much as you will be if you're in downtown Manhattan or downtown LA. It's kind of a no-brainer. And the one size fits all approach to healthcare, I think people are tired of it. And so what we have right now cannot continue. It's just, which way do we go? I like to say that one political party has no ideas and the other political party has really bad ideas. And I'll let people kind of make up their minds of who I'm talking about on that one. But, you know, innovation comes from industry and innovation comes from the grassroots movements like we're doing right now. So it can be very, very powerful. And we have the wind at our sail. The wind is at our back. It's filling up our sails right now. So I like the momentum we're going. We just have to make sure that we don't become our own worst enemy as we're building this.
Well, one of the ways we look at economics is that entrepreneurs bring the kinds of services and qualities that originally were only available to the wealthy. They're the market openers, if you like, and they bring it to everybody. They're the market expanders, and the entrepreneur is interested in the extent of the market. So I think, as you say, the wind's at your back on that. And the other thing that's interesting about modern technology is the creation of this new business called platforms. You've used that word a lot, and that really seems to be a big innovation. So the doctors can be on your platform, they can draw services from it, you can give them all kind of help, but that enables the one-on-one relationship of the patient to the doctor. So the platform is really a breakthrough concept. It seems you're using it in a very innovative way in healthcare.
It is. A lot of people think platform, they think, oh, I need to download this app and then everything will run from there. And, you know, it's not really the case. Platform to us just means a bundle of enabling assets that anybody is able to tap into. And I always like the visual part of it that, you know, a doctor can come kind of stand on our platform, reach up for the stars, and they can really achieve anything. So it's a way for us to just kind of consolidate what we're doing and our expertise and be able to, you know, proliferate that amongst anybody who wants to use it. And it really is helping out a lot of people, and it's very rewarding to do. You know, if you're a doctor and you're struggling trying to figure out, hey, there's got to be a better way to do this, there are solutions out there for you. If it's not with us, then, you know, there's a lot of other things you could go out and do, but you don't have to just go in and beat your head against the desk every day thinking the status quo is the only way to do things.
Yep. Well, Chris, thank you. We believe very strongly that the entrepreneurial solution is always the best solution for both the producer and the consumer, and it drives to the lower price and the best quality and the most humanity. So thank you for what you do. We'll provide a link to the Freedom HealthWorks website and also to your podcast. What else would you like us to provide for information to anybody who wants to find out more about what you do?
Yeah, so we have this podcast called, you know, Healthcare Americana. It just telling stories. And I appreciate you letting me share that too. We just tell stories about these doctors. You get kind of the first, you know, you hear it from them, first person stories about what their struggles were and why they're doing this, and some other innovation that's happening in the industry, which is really, really neat. FreedomHealthWorks.com, you know, if you're physicians and medical focused, great website for you. If you're listening and interested in saying, you know, I'm going to redefine my workplace benefits, or I'm going to look and go see, you know, if this is the best option for me. We have a consumer site called freedomdoc.care, and that'll hopefully answer all your questions and be able to find all our locations there. And, you know, I encourage people to reach out to us, and there's a good chance that I'm going to be seeing some emails or anything else like that coming in. And, you know, if we can help, we love to get creative. We love to help, you know, people solve problems, especially in this arena. So, don't be shy is the biggest thing I can say right now.
Good. Well, Chris, thanks to you. Thank you very much for being with us today. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Hunter. Appreciate everything you guys do.
Economics for Business is a production of the Mises Institute. To explore more content like this, visit Mises.org. And for more from Hunter Hastings, visit HunterHastings.com.